Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 76 and a half. That's right, bonus edition stuff from Cleveland, Ohio. I guess you can call it Believeland if you're one of those types of people, but all I know is OH.
Hi-yo.
All right, it's 6 o'clock in the morning. Cold coffee is with me. John Morgan here. It has been an interesting night at USC 203. It's getting late. We got a plane to catch.
It's getting early.
It's getting early. I don't even know what it is anymore. Frosty beverages are being consumed. I will say that.
Thank God, the
leader of the MMA Junkie crew, Mr. Dan Stubb, he's asleep right now, and I don't blame him. In fairness, he worked about a 22-hour day. So he might be waking up any minute here in a little bit to come get some breakfast before he ships out. But while he does that, we're going to recap UFC 203. Cold coffee, I got to admit, you were right about Stipe Miocic all along. You had him. You were backing him.
You just thought it was just because it was Ohio.
I did. I thought you were just backing him as a homer. But tell me you didn't get a little bit nervous when Alistair Overeem came in there and dropped him.
Yeah, I did. Initially, as soon as he went down. But as soon as he grabbed him, or as soon as Alistair went in and started to try to apply that choke and whatnot, there was just something like one, I was hoping, but when he moved, and then you saw a glimpse of life going in there, and when he was still able to grab the elbow and moved a little bit, and as soon as you saw his head turn a little bit, so it was kind of getting into the crook there a little bit and started breaking that a little bit, I was like, oh, he's perfect. And actually, he got right back up and started firing, so I was really amazed at how well he recovered from what I know was a devastating hit.
I was impressed, too, because I will say this. I was kind of I shouldn't say I'm surprised that Alistair went for the guillotine choke in that situation, because he definitely has Stipe in trouble. But Alistair does have a good guillotine choke. He's shown it over the years that he has good submission skills, especially with that guillotine choke. I was a little surprised that he went for it in that position. I think, honestly, and it's kind of crazy, as veteran of a man as Alistair Overeem is, I think just sticking with punches might have gotten the job done for him. But all credit to Stipe, because he was definitely rocked. He was definitely in trouble. And you're right, man. The submission defense was on point. And I don't think we've ever talked about, Stipe as having incredible submission defense. We've talked about his heavy hands. We've talked about, his great wrestling. But I've never heard anybody talking about his submission defense. And that was good, because he was in a bad spot.
Yeah. And I can't fault Overeem either for doing what he did. I think he's had so much good effort or good effect when he's done that move. I think that was just what's happened so many times. I think when he noticed that he rocked a guy, I mean, I can only imagine a guy like that that's got that much power knows how much he hurts these guys. And he's been in that position before. I know he's knocked guys down. He's like, oh, now all I got to do is just put this arm here.
Done.
And it's a done deal. But, I bet he was surprised himself when he was feeling Stipe fighting that, And, of course, he thought there was the whole tap thing that happened, and I'm not sure, if that was just, him being a little sore or wasn't quite sure. But, granted, he got rocked a couple times, too. I'm not sure if it was something that stuck in his head, because I certainly didn't hear him or see him complain once he got out of it and they sort of separated.
Not.
He didn't make any motions to the ref to say, hey, he tapped. He never said anything, so I don't know. It might have just been a little cloudy judgment, so I won't hold that against him. Because as Joe, and it was a little brutal that Joe kind of kept showing it over and over. Well, not Joe. I mean, he's just hearing it in his ear when he's like, "Well, here, let's play this.
Yeah.
Tell me where the tap was." And he's like,
"Yeah, that was harsh."
He's like,
"I was like, dude,
he's like,
let's go to another angle."
That was a little bit rough, and you just saw the sadness in Overeem's eyes as that was kind of going on.
You know what I kind of took out of that? Like, how we talk about fighters fighting on instinct sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
I almost felt like that was Overeem, interviewing on instinct. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even think he was necessarily – not that he didn't know what was going on, but, Stipe's hands did come up and grab the arms, and so maybe –
Well, that's the only part that, when I was trying to give Alistair some leniency, and that was that – when he was coming up to grab the elbow and go, there was almost a little part where, granted, his head's in a position, so he has to sort of feel with his hands. He's seen with how he's feeling.
That's right.
So I think as he was kind of grabbing, maybe there before he really hooked on, there might have been a brush of the arm and then the grab on the top. And, Alistair could have been really hoping and thinking, this is in here secure. I'm going to get the quick tap. Oh, I feel a light touch. Oh, now he's on the other, the top part of the arm. In his mind, that might have been touch. But, you know, after going back and watching it in slow-mo, you know, he was even, you know, couldn't justify or couldn't say it himself.
No, I will say I did see, I was kind of, just before we jumped on, as we were finishing up our work and you were loading up those last couple of videos, I did see that Joe Rogan actually tweeted that he asked UFC brass, can they not interview knocked out fighters anymore because it seems unfair to them? And I think,
yeah,
kudos to Joe Rogan, man. I kind of agree.
Well, just like, I don't think it was Joe's, you know, obviously, you know, Joe's being told in his ear what to do and what to say. He's not magically calling the replay. Yeah. Hey, come on, let's really do this replay thing and can you run it back, you know? So, you know, it sucks for him that, to be put in that position all the time. Because I think people initially, their gut reaction is, I can't believe Rogan threw him under the bus. You know, I mean, it's not Rogan's doing. I mean, he's just listening. See, you know, we could go back to that whole Rondo instance that happened way back in the day.
The guy in the truck.
You know, the guy in the truck. And I guarantee it was probably the same guy in the truck that did this one. And it's true. I mean, there's a part of it where yes, it is a sport and it is a spectacle, but you also, you know, you're not doing any good for the fighter. You're not doing any good for the brand if you're putting a guy that's, you know, in a sense, half concussed. You know.
Absolutely.
You know, and having them trying to talk and think about things because their, you know, their memory is going to be changed. There's short-term memory loss at that point, you know. And in his mind, maybe there was. And last thing you want to do then is point it out, oh, what did you think you saw? Because it does no good for the fighter. And
it was
if
a little bit awkward.
Else. Yeah,
it was a little bit awkward.
It was, and I actually kind of felt bad.
Yeah.
For Alistair, because I don't think he really was trying to be a sore sport.
That's what I mean, kind of like interviewing on instinct, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think he was just saying whatever came up and wasn't really processing what the PR, you know, of that answer meant, you know, what the impact would be. So, but I will say this, so big win for Stipe Miocic. That was fantastic. I said it, you know, in one of our videos early, what really mattered. Like, to me, that was one of the best one-round heavyweight fights you'll ever see. I mean, ebbs and flows, back and forth, knockdowns. But I think what made it even more special was, man, just the atmosphere at the Q, the Quicken Loans Arena. Cleveland came strong, man. I looked up. First of all, it was about two or three fights into the night, and that whole building was damn near full. But at the main event, like, I looked around, and I tried to find an open seat. I tried to find one empty seat somewhere in there. I couldn't find one single empty seat, and they were so loud. It was a very cool scene, man. And Cleveland came strong to support Stipe, and I thought that was really, really cool to see. And I think they got rewarded for their efforts with a fantastic fight. And I don't know, man. Is this, as an Ohio native, is this whole thing about, like, I mean, they haven't had winners for a long time. That's just more to Cleveland, right? I mean, you've had the Buckeyes. They've been
I mean, Ohio's had winners. But, yeah, when it comes to professional sports, not so much. I mean, the Blue Jackets have done well for themselves. The Crew has done well for them. That's soccer, and that's a hockey and the soccer team. But as for, like, football and things of that sort, no, it's been many, many years. It was, like, 52 years or whatever.
It feels like they're
for
rallying
a championship
right
to
now,
come up
man.
To Cleveland and stuff. But, yeah, right now they're making up for lost time for sure.
I thought it was cool to see. I don't know if you got to catch this or not, but you know, Dana didn't even bother to wait for the announcement to be read of the winner. He just handed the belt over to Stipe.
Yeah.
And Stipe held it up in the center of the cage, and
I thought maybe Stipe asked for it or grabbed it or won it, and who's going to argue with him at that point, you know?
Yeah, like, oh, dude,
Dana's
don't
like,
hit me.
You just fucking destroyed over him. Here you go. You know, what do you want? Here you go.
Yeah. Well, I guess they've had that moment before, right, where Stipe kind of yelled over to Dana, like, do you see me now or whatever. He's like, oh, I see you now. I was trying to read his lips. I think Dana basically handed him the belt and was like, here, man, it's yours. You keep it. You know, like, it was kind of cool. So a very, very neat moment for Stipe Miocic. Got his heart tested a little bit, got his chin tested a little bit, passed it with flying colors, and he says that and still is going to be around for a long time. So let's take a quick moment and hear from the heavyweight champ.
Stipe, congratulations. Obviously an incredible fight this evening. Talk about the way you felt after that? It had to be a lot of emotion just with the atmosphere and then being such a back-and-forth fight. What was the emotion after the fight?
Thank God it's over. yeah, he hit a lot harder than I thought. You know, he put me on my ass. But, you know, I was okay. You know, he put me down. You know, for a split second, I was like, whoa. But then you got me that front leg. I got out of it. I felt fine and then took over. I needed it, actually.
I was going to say, I mean, it was such a unique experience. You know, it didn't work out for Fabricio in Brazil earlier this year. It worked out great for you tonight. What was the experience? Was there added pressure? Was there anything different fighting in front of that crowd?
Yeah, I would totally rather fight in Brazil. It's a lot easier for me, honestly. I mean, literally, just the last, oh, my God, 4 months has been crazy in my life, you know. And he thought I was partying and all that. But unfortunately, I was training really, really hard for this fight because I didn't have a moment to stop. You know, I got married, did all that. But, I'm going to take some time to myself now and go on a honeymoon with my wife and, you know, treat her.
And I know you want to enjoy this moment, and you deserve to. But, of course, with champs, we always look to what's next. You know, Fabricio thought with a win he deserved to fight you again. You've got Cain Velasquez, who said, you know, he looked great at 200. He'd like to fight you. What do you think should come next? And knowing that you want to take some time off, do you at least have a time frame when you'd like to come back?
No. whoever you want me to fight, I'm going to fight. But I need to take some time to myself. You know, everyone else gets all these year, year and a half. I mean, I just want a few months. You know what I mean? I didn't take any time off, which is fine. But right now, I don't care what they put in front of me. I'm going to stay champ for a long time. Like I said, I'm going to be Anstill for a long time.
Stipe, over to your left. Congrats on the win, of course.
Thanks, brother.
Obviously, the crowd was crazy tonight. How much of that did you hear on the way out? And did you have to block it out? Did you soak it in? Because, I mean, this felt like, you know, a really crazy crowd tonight.
Because people are crazy. That's why I live here. That's how we do it. We don't mess around. Wait till next week and then I go tailgating in the Browns game. You're going to see a lot more fights. I'm not going to be in one of them, but, you know, we watch them. That's how we do it, man. You know, like I said, I'd rather fight Brazil, man, because I was just, I got a little emotional in my head for a split second, you know, this is badass, you know, and then people were, just trying to mentally keep them out, but I'm going to remember this for the rest of my life.
So Stipe Miocic and still your UFC heavyweight champion. I was wrong. I picked against him. A lot of people picked against him in the media picks. I was surprised to see, and I think people maybe just doubt Stipe a little bit, and I'll be the first to admit, I guess I was at the front of that line, doubting Stipe and what he's capable of, but he continues to impress me, that's for damn sure. Okay, I think what's next for Stipe has got to be Cain Velasquez. Cain looked so incredibly good at UFC 200, and I think Fabricio Werdum and Travis Brown, not so much Travis Brown, but at least Fabricio Werdum, stepped into this co-main event tonight with the opportunity to perhaps at least make a case, to at least state that they deserve to be in there or that Fabricio deserved to be in there. Fabricio did pick up the win, and he said straight up he thinks he deserves the title fight next, but I got to say, I thought it was an uninspiring performance.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Cain looked incredible last time, and, I mean, we just saw it, and I mean, yes, he was the champ and, you know, and just got a win after that loss or whatever, but I just, I know he wants it, and I know Stipe, if it's given, is more than happy to fight that, but I don't, I just saw it, and maybe that's my own, thing that, because I just saw it, or not just me, but we all just saw that fight, so I'm not desiring it as much as seeing something new happen, because if we run in the instance and they put it together, what if it's over again super, super quick?
Yep.
Then we got to wait another 5-6 months for the belt to get challenged again. You know, I'd rather kind of open it back up a little bit and let Cain get in there. Seeing Junior all around was awesome.
He looks in good shape.
He looks in such good shape. I wouldn't be opposed to have Fabricio and JDS kind of go at it now.
They got a little history. You know, they might want to go revisit that.
You know, and kind of go in there or something. But, I don't know. I wouldn't be upset if he got it, but, yeah, that wouldn't be my first pick.
Well, let's talk about this fight, the way it played out, because things could have changed for Fabricio Werdum a couple times along the way. Number one, he came out with that insane flying kick. And that insane flying kick landed.
That was vicious. That was pretty incredible.
It didn't quite land flush, but it did seem to me that Travis took like one step back or so, like, whoa.
How could you not? I mean, that landed flush. I mean, his head cocked back quite a bit. You know, that was That was pretty impressive.
So, I mean, had he come out and just floored Travis with that, and it was like, I mean, I think he was probably like an inch or two away from that being a finishing type blow. Had he done that, now you might go, okay, I want to see this fight again.
Yeah, that would have had to have, they would have had to swap that part of that open scene that used to be with like Anderson knocking down Vitor. Yeah. They would have been like, all right, let's swap that one out for a little bit. Here, put this one in.
The heavyweight coming through. Okay, so that happened. Then the other thing that happened was Travis broke his finger at some point in that first round, and I think it was that punch that they showed on the replay. I've actually seen some pictures floating around. I haven't seen any good still photographs yet, but I've seen some video screen caps where you can see Travis Brown's bone poking through the finger.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's weird about that is that he complained about it, and referee Gary Copeland essentially granted him a timeout.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of those things where Gary just panicked a little bit, maybe, or
yeah,
because you're not allowed to call timeout.
Yeah,
you can't call timeout.
I don't know if initially he thought maybe there was something else, like the way that it was happening. I didn't see initially. I thought maybe Travis was complaining, like something stabbed his hand or something was going on, and I thought maybe, you know, I was like, wait, was there something that punctured his hand or something? Mm-hmm. You know, is there something on Radum's body or a person or something? But I thought he just either made something that, you know, Gary, the ref, didn't catch it at first. So when he stopped it, I think he was trying to pay attention and say, oh, wait, what's going on?
Right.
You know, is there something wrong with the hand gear or something? And he was confused. But rather than do what he was supposed to and I guess realize that the fighter was having an injury that couldn't continue, turned his back, did all this stuff. So rather than try to just say, oh, timeout, because a timeout doesn't exist, he should have stopped the fight, you know, and did whatever. But if anything, he made the mistake. I mean, I don't blame the fact that it was able to continue. Ultimately, it was probably
the right decision when you realize you screwed up to let him keep fighting.
You know, and I'm glad that Fabricio didn't really hold that against him and didn't. He was like, whatever, yeah, I understand what was going on.
Yeah.
And he was able to continue. So
that's
true, because
when it was playing out, watching live, I thought maybe, you know, you see, there's a couple things that happen sometimes. You've seen sometimes where guys' fingers get, like, stuck inside the glove, like it gets bent back, or, you know, and you're like.
And I think that's what somebody else maybe said. They thought, like, the tape or something was pinching or doing something restricting the movements, and they wanted him to, you know, cut something out or whatever. But
they came in and looked at it, and if his bone was sticking to the hand and they let him fight on, just ridiculous. It was just weird, man. It was just a cluster of errors. But the fight continues to play on. I thought Fabricio just convincingly won the fight. I like Travis Brown, man. I like him as a fighter. I like him as a person. I know he had some crazy issues along the way, but every time I've ever had a chance to really talk to Travis Brown, I feel like he's a sincere individual, and I like talking with him. I think he's a thoughtful person, but man, he is having some struggles in his game right now. It kind of reminds me of Jake Ellenberger in a way, how Jake Ellenberger was, you know, this vicious dude, and then for whatever reason, you know, got caught up in, like, overthinking things and not being that vicious dude. And I think Travis needs to find a way to go back to being that vicious dude. And I think that's going to be a big key to success. Now, the crazy thing that happened was after this fight was over, Edmund Tarverdian, Travis Brown's coach, kind of got into it with Fabricio Werdum. And Fabricio ended up throwing a push kick at him. Now, he says, listen, it wasn't really a kick. And it's true. If you go back and watch the replay, it wasn't necessarily like a strike, you know what I mean? It wasn't like an Anderson Silva front kick to the face. It was more just like a kick, stay away from me. But that's bizarre to see a fighter, especially an elite-level UFC fighter, striking a coach.
Yeah. I mean, and it's one of those times that, you know, to be honest, I was actually talking to Dan at the moment because we were talking about some of the previous fights or whatever. You know, the fight just started and didn't really think of anything about it. And just missed most of that. Or actually, after it's done, we weren't even paying attention right there until we started seeing people freak out or whatever. So then I was waiting for the replay to figure out what even happened.
Where you're trying to pay attention to be like, let me make sure I see this.
Happen. Yeah, let me keep track of what's going to happen between the coaches and the corners and the fighters before they raise the hands or whatever. But yeah, very bizarre. And I don't know. Edwards, I think, has done some Edmund, whatever the fuck, has done some bizarre shit in the past. And I don't know, man. Even when he went back in the corner, was saying some really odd stuff to Travis throughout the night. Like,
see, I couldn't hear it live, but he was on our side of the cage, and I couldn't hear it because I didn't have the audio feed like you did back in the press room. But I could hear that he was basically just like, Yelling at him.
Yeah,
he was like almost.
He was in a weird, weird mood, and it carried over. I mean, it. I don't know what was going on. I've never seen him do that before. I've never seen him try to yell at a fight. I don't know if that's a new tack that he's trying to take or that he thinks works with Travis or whatever. Maybe it does, but just watching it, it just struck me as something wasn't right. And then to see that at the end, you know, it just made me. Just made me think that, you know, there was something weird going on.
Well, it's
with him.
Funny you say all that because I did see some reaction online, and I'm not going to lie, I pretty much agree with it. That people were saying there would probably be a hell of a lot more outrage at Fabricio's actions, except that it was against Edmund Tarverdi, and I think a lot of people were just like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if that was Greg Jackson, like if he had thrown a kick at Greg Jackson, if he had thrown a kick at, you know, Duke Rufus, I think people would have kind of. Been up in arms, but I think because it was Edmund, and I think a lot of people aren't necessarily Edmund fans. I think they just kind of said, eh, whatever.
Yeah. Nuts. Still getting texts from our boys, Angelo. I'm like, Angelo, don't you sleep, brother.
Angelo Reyes, go to sleep.
Go to sleep. Go I know I want to sleep, but.
Well, listen, let's hear quickly from Fabricio Werdum because I did get to talk to him briefly and did get to ask him for his side of the situation. And he says, look, he didn't mean anything personal out of it. So let's hear from Fabricio Werdum.
Well, Fabricio, kind of start to finish, this was kind of a weird fight. Just talk about how you felt about the entire performance as a whole and how you did tonight.
Yes, man, for sure when you win, when you have a win, everything is happy, you know. I'm very happy, my team, everybody happy, because when you lose, it's terrible in your life. And I think it's a good job. I did a good job, good fight, you know, very smart fight because it's very important, the victory. But I just saw Stimiotic now. I say for him the rematch. He said okay, because I think he's loved me. You know, no, it's good, man. I think I did everything. Just the first kick. I don't ask to my coach. I don't say nothing. But the flight kick, I did it. This is number 3. I did it in Pride in 2006 versus Overeem, and after then in Brazil in Jungle Fight. I did it versus Gonzaga. You know Gonzaga, yes? And this is number 3. You know, this is my special one. I just saw the kick. I did. That's it. It's good.
Some confusion in the first round when it looked like Travis had a hand injury. You continued to fight on. The referee stepped in. You looked pretty upset at kind of how things unfolded. What were you thinking as that happened?
I mean, the referee is there for a stop or keep going the fight, you know? The ref stopped the fight. I'm stopped, that's it. I respect the ref, that's it. But he don't stop the fight. Sometimes happen. I mean, commentary all the time. I'm commentating UFC Network. I saw a lot of times when the guy say the finger in the eyes, and the guy don't stop the fight, keep going. The ref don't say nothing, I keep going the fight. Why did he stop the fight? You know? It's not my job. I just did my job, just fight, you know? And I just give one punch. Maybe I give him more, but I say okay because I see he turned his body. I stop after then, and when the referee stopped the fight, he say stop. I stop. You know that's it. But I saw his bone, man. I saw his break his finger, and I saw his bone. I don't know why the athletic commission don't stop the fight. I don't understand, but it's okay, man. It's good.
And talk about after the fight, of course, kind of a weird scene there. You and Edmund Tarverdian looked like you threw a kick at him. What exactly happened there? Explain what happened, and do you have any regrets that you assaulted a coach?
No. His coach came, everybody boo, you know? Everybody say, ooh. You know why? Because this is a Stimiotic house. When the Stimiotic go to Brazil, everybody boo him too. I think the guy say, go the same thing. I say, okay, no problem. And this coach, the coach coming, I don't know his name.
Edmund Tarverdi.
Ah, okay. And he say, hey, shut up your mouth, son of a bitch. I say, what? Como é que é, filha da puta? Huh? Ah, motherfucker. Yes, he say, motherfucker. he say, motherfucker. I say, shut up your mouth, motherfucker. I say, what? And then, no. You say for me, it's okay, but not for my mom, you know? And I just keep the distance. I don't got the kick, man. I just keep the distance because, you know, he's a boxing coach. And I see in his eyes he wanna punch my face, you know. And I just keep the distance. That's it. But he come first. He says a lot of things, bad things, you know. And my mom say, never say bad things for nobody. I say, okay. But he start.
All right. So Fabrice Verdun picks up a big win for him, but not necessarily in the best fashion possible. Interesting note, he came into the fight with a broken foot. It sounded like a fractured foot. Did take a shot beforehand, which I thought was kind of weird that he revealed that at the post-fight press conference. His manager, Ali Abdelaziz, told me it was cortisone and that it was approved by USADA. I did ask the UFC for comment. It was late. It is late. It's early. I'm told that, you know, they're going to get me comment and get some approval on that. But a little bit bizarre, I thought, that came out. So we'll see what happens there. What about Cowboy? You just wrote Cowboy.
I just remembered something from the press. Like, it hasn't came out, but maybe we'll break it in the post-fight stuff.
All right.
You know, we were talking about
You don't have to pass me notes. You can just talk.
But I wrote it there so I wouldn't forget that I wanted to talk about it.
Just say it now, damn it.
But in the post-fight, they bring guest fighters back, you know, and Captain. I'm fucking tired. Captain Cerrone. Cowboy Cerrone.
Captain Cerrone.
He actually had a captain's hat. It wasn't a cowboy hat. It was a captain's hat. Donald, who came back with his little Bud Lights hidden in his jacket, you know, he was a couple sheets to the good, you know, and they say, most people say three sheets to the win. He was a couple. He was on his way. Pretty much admitted or said that even though the UFC was saying that, and I'm sure they didn't like it because they were standing right there, even though they were saying that no fight was ever official, nothing, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
He said contracts were signed, you know, paperwork was done.
Interesting.
And that Robbie actually came to him first and apologized and said, you know, some things of whatever had happened or whatever, and the fight couldn't happen, couldn't go on. And Donald didn't hold any grudges to him, you know, he likes him, I think he mainly wanted just to get on that New York card.
Yeah.
And, you know, so when he was pressed whether Robbie is still the next one or should it be whatever, he was like, whatever, you know.
Right.
Yes, of course it could be Robbie or it could not be Robbie. It could be whatever. He just wants to fight, but he wanted to be more on that card. But I know we weren't talking about this, but I want to make sure I forgot about it. Didn't forget about it before, but so there's some news that because we're not going to probably get that out till tomorrow or the day or so after.
Yeah, because we got to fly home tomorrow. So
for the hardcores that are listening to anything else,
if
there's any sort of breaking that you take from this, you know, I know that the UFC's went out of their way to say that it wasn't official, even though Dana went out there and said it. But according to Cowboy, man, contracts are signed like 3 months ago or something.
Damn. Well, here's
was
my
either 3 weeks or 3 months ago.
I'm probably 3 weeks, but you know what, man? Weeks turn into months. Maybe 3 months in like doggy years or something.
Yeah, right.
But here's what I have heard too, is that UFC is having to be careful about what they announce and what they don't announce, because technically there's still legalization and rules being signed, which I believe there was even a commercial aired tonight for UFC 205 that had like a disclaimer on it that said like pending NYSAC approval, New York State Athletic Commission approval. So I think that's part of the reason like they're having to be careful about it now. So
make it go away.
Nice insight there. Anything else from the guest fighters tonight?
That's all I can remember. I mean, JDS was back there. JDS has been absolutely incredible this week. When we had I think we said earlier in the first podcast, like, that'll be coming out. Stay tuned for that stuff. But, no, he was, again, in good form in the back. Never brought Forrest back, who was supposed to be here for some reason. Didn't see him. Cody Garbrandt came back there. Of course, was just more than ready to talk about Dom.
God, he's got to be sick of talking about
God, he's got to be sick about seeing all the
Q&A
in the media,
interview.
Man. So, but, no, that was a big one. That was the main thing I took away that was the moment for me where it was like, oh, cool, finally got something like – some dirty good stories from the back, but
Dirty stories from the back.
Wow,
that sounds terrible. All right, the featured fight this evening, Mickey Gall did what most people thought he would do. He came in and basically just demolished CM Punk. Man, this fight, I will say this. CM Punk's entrance was cool. I mean, just the energy that was in that building was cool. It was very evident what a star he was. It was cool to see him soaking in the moment and really enjoying it. But when it came time to fight, he looked like a guy that was making his professional debut, man. He ran out. He overcommitted on a punch that he never even really got off. Mickey Gall just slipped underneath it, took him to the ground.
Yeah.
And Mickey Gall was a beast once they were on the floor, man. He didn't give CM Punk one chance. I did start to worry for a second because Punk was taking some damage, but he was at least moving and shifting. Yeah. Like, he didn't give up. I was like, oh, my gosh, is Mickey Gall going to punch himself out? And, you know, end up getting caught by something silly, but he didn't.
The main thing I thought where there was a moment was when, like you said, Punk came out there and kind of ran a little forward. And when Mickey dived under and grabbed his legs and Punk kind of hooked his arms underneath, I was just thinking, like, this is the wrestling move thing that I was waiting. I was waiting him for like him to just fucking DDT suplex him over or something. And I was like, and then it didn't happen. I was like, okay, never mind. The moment passed. But there was a moment where I was like, this is it. This is the one that's going to shock the world. And it didn't happen. And he went down, and that was it. He never got back up.
Yeah, it was weird, man. I mean, I guess, you know, especially because the buildup has been so long. And we all kind of knew what we thought was going to happen. But, you know, I did think, What if CM Punk has something special, you know, and the confidence that he walked in with, and I don't know. And then afterwards, I'm not going to lie, like, I just felt bad for him. You know, I really liked his attitude, and I've respected what he's done, and man, dude, you could just see he was heartbroken.
Yeah, he sure was. Yeah, I mean, to the point that he was getting ready. Well, he did tear up a little bit at the presser. I mean, you could definitely tell this affected him. I mean, this was more than a guy using his fame to get a privilege to do something that most people don't do. I mean, granted, he did do that, but he was taking it seriously, and he put a lot of heart and effort into it, and he had a lot of people backing him up, you know, like his wife and whatnot, and he took it hard. I mean, I think we all would. He had a chance to do something and prove something to himself and to a lot of the doubters, and it fell short, and I think he realized, too, that might be the only chance he gets, at least initially, to do that in the UFC.
See, here's what's interesting. In the UFC, I think you're right, because, man, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if the UFC wants to let him go, because he is still a big name. I mean, our traffic was surging on the site tonight. You know, he was definitely getting mainstream coverage, and I think to go to Bellator or World Series or Risen or somewhere else, I mean, he'd get some attention. But here's what's interesting to me is that, you know, he said – you know, that he wasn't necessarily expecting to fight in the UFC for his first fight, but it happened, and he decided, you know, how can I turn that down? And he said, listen, I'm going to do this again, and I think he seems committed to doing it regardless of what level, but, man, that feeling I got from him tonight is like this dude is, like, addicted to this stuff, man. Like, he wants to do this, and I just don't know, man. Like, maybe he just started too late.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
If you put him up against some other dudes his age that are just getting started or whatever, but again, you know, I think back to Vancouver when we were talking to Jim Miller, and Jim Miller was like, dude, Mickey Gall's been training since he was 16 years old. He wanted to be a pro fighter since he was a teenager. He's lived nearly a decade of his life living this lifestyle, preparing for this moment. And, dude, you can't overcome that in a year and a half of training, no matter how good of an athlete you are, with no combat sports experience.
Yeah. Tough. I mean, yeah, I know we talked about it earlier, and I mean, it's a big gap to try to bridge in the 2 years. I mean, I think that's why it was pushed back to even the 2 years. I mean, initially it was going to be like 8 months, 9 months, and then it got pushed back, and then got pushed back, and then there was surgery or whatever. But it happened, but you know, I want him, now that he says that he's wants to keep doing, I want him to do well. You know, I want him to work through the ranks and be able to have his And it's not like I follow the guy and have some sort of affinity for him. I think just having all this buildup that was leading up to it, you know, I bought into the story. I wanted to you know, feel good for the guy now right. at this point. So now I want him to kind of go through a smaller organization.
A bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and he's been there now. He's done 2 years of good work. You know, it'd be interesting to see what a four-year CM Punk looks like, a five-year, and if he keeps going forward. But then you start running the issue, too, of, you know, does he want to still take the hits and the training and all that stuff when he starts to reach the 42, 43? And at that point, is one of these people going to be willing to shell out money to keep getting, you know, to get this guy that might never, ever pay off?
Well, here's what I'd like to see. I would like to see the UFC work with one of the companies that broadcasts on Fight Pass and basically ship him off to the minor league, so to speak, and let him get some more seasoning. You know, you think about what, I don't know if they could do the same arrangement. I mean, Cyborg Justino, you know, she was fighting for Invicta for quite a while still being under the Zuffa payroll. You know, I wonder if, I don't know, we don't know how much CM Punk made yet, so I don't know if they'd be willing to keep paying for him, but maybe they could ship him to a Legacy. We did see Legacy president Mick Maynard walking around this week. He was on stage at the weigh-ins. He was cage side tonight for some reason. I still think maybe they're going to hire him as a matchmaker to replace Joe Silva. Nobody will say it, but I think that's what's going on. So, but maybe they could work something out. But all right, listen, CM Punk, I knew nothing about him when the UFC hired him. I'm not going to lie. I didn't know a damn thing about him, but I've come to like the guy. I like his honesty. I like his openness. I like the way he addresses things head on and just his attitude about the whole game. So even though he lost tonight, he did come speak to the media. And let's hear a little bit from CM Punk.
Hello. Always a tough crowd.
Well, Punk, this, of course, was not the result that you had hoped for, but you talked all along about this was about the journey as well. So now that it's over, at least for the moment, didn't come up your way. How are you feeling about the whole process right now?
The process was magical. You know, I'm just disappointed. I'm beating myself up way more than I got beat up. You know, I'm supremely disappointed. But you know, the answer to your question is, aside from the outcome, wouldn't change anything for the world. It was just being out there under the lights, most fun I've ever had, and to say it again, second best day of my life. First one was my wife when I married her. Thank you. Yeah, I would have thrown the right hand faster. I think I was a little late throwing the two, and then I got taken down.
You did come out incredibly aggressive. How did that match up with the plan? Was the intention to rush forward that way?
Yeah, you know, watching what little tape there is on Mickey, I think nobody pressured him, you know what I mean? And once he got in a rhythm, especially in that first pro fight he had, because the one with Mike Jackson was so short, but the first pro fight, it's the guy was just moving backwards. The plan was to just move forward. You know, I was either going to come back with my shield or on it, and I think that's the game I played.
And just last for me, you said at the end that this is not the end of the journey, that you want to keep going. Do you intend to do that at the UFC level, or would you be willing to say, you know, maybe do it at a lower level so that you can continue to develop your skills, not at the highest level of the sport?
My initial venture into this was going to be at the lowest level. You know, this opportunity just got presented to myself. I would have been a fool to say no. I don't know what happens from here on out. You know what I mean? What if I get cut? I don't know. You know what I mean? I think that's a possibility. Do I want that to happen? No. But who's to say where I go from here? I don't know. I definitely want to keep going. You know, I'm the kind of guy, you know, I just fell off a bike. You know, I'm not just going to shelve it and leave it in the middle of the street. I got to get back on the ride.
All right. CM Punk opening up, keeping it real, being honest. I wish him the best, man. I like I said, I feel like he's got this addiction for the sport, man. I feel like he's got this passion, this love. And hopefully it doesn't take him down a dark path, man. I hope he can find some success. Flip side of that equation, Mickey Gall, young kid who is, man, just making the best of this situation, right? Like, he is calling the shots. Great performance by him, man. I mean, you know, I don't know how much we learned about him tonight. He said he wanted to see his striking, or show his striking, I should say. We didn't really get to see too much of that. We saw more of his ground game and his control game, his transition game. But I like the aggression. I like the I like the obvious physical skills there, the physical ability. And he calls out Sage Northcutt next. And at first I was like, come on. Everybody calls out Sage Northcutt, right? But it's kind of not a bad move, right, for Mickey Gall. Like, you know, other people calling him out, I don't know how much sense it makes, but I'm kind of okay with that fight.
Yeah. No, I'm fine with that. And it's funny, like, to go back to when he was saying he wanted to show more of his striking or whatever, he was perfectly in the position, I mean, to dictate how that fight was just going to sprint across the stage, you know, to dictate. But still, you know, step to the side or something, you know, like... He said he resorted to his training and ducked under, you know, went for the double leg, whatever, took him down or whatever. But, you know, if he'd been working so much on this striking, I'm just surprised. It was up to him. He dictated where that fight went at that point, you know. I think he could have probably stepped to the side, you know, and I don't know. It just kind of showed me a little bit that maybe he wasn't really – yeah, if you really want to show and if you're really – as, you know, sharp. I mean, I watched the guy in open workouts, and I'm sold, you know, especially watching him slide around the jiu-jitsu and whatever stuff. That sort of stuff works. So maybe, if anything, he was going to go. But, yeah, I mean, I think he was – if there's not a fight – or if there's a fight where you think you want to really showcase something, I think a fight against a guy that's 0-0 is probably going to be the fight that you can probably make that happen. And if not, then maybe it's not as – on point as you think it is. But who knows?
I did like Buffer's call that CM Punk was making his Octagon debut. Like, I've seen in the past, like, when guys are making their debut, that ring announcers will say, he comes to us with a record of 0 wins and 0 losses. Like, that just sounds stupid. So props to
Buffer.
He's
undefeated.
Yeah, props to Buffer. Yeah, an undefeated record with 0 wins to his name.
But no losses.
But no losses. That is true. He was undefeated for tonight. All right. What else can you say? Let's just hear from Mickey Gall. I like the kid's attitude. I like his enthusiasm, and he does seem like somebody to watch. I'm not trying to label him right now a future champion, but he does seem like somebody we should be watching. So here's Mickey Gall.
Mickey, this has been an interesting journey for you, to say the least. Now that it's behind you, talk about the feeling and the emotion, how you're feeling at this moment.
I feel great, man. Yeah, it's a long time coming. Man, the past 3 weeks dragged. Like, you know, it was 6 months I knew this fight was going to happen. You know what I mean? So I'm happy to be through it. I'm so super grateful for the opportunity, and I'm ready for, you know, the UFC killers now. That's what I want. I want war with the best guys in the world.
You certainly seem to have supreme confidence all the way along, but there was this kind of, I don't know, a fear of the unknown, I guess, with CM Punk. What if he was a killer behind closed doors and you just didn't know about it? I mean, was there ever any moment along this time where you had a little bit of doubt to think, you know, maybe this guy is going to turn out to be way more than I thought?
Yeah, there's a possibility. It could have been all that training. He's a phenomenal actor. It could have been acting. You know, I knew my kill stuff was going to be more than his kill stuff. I know two-year guys. I know... You know, I beat up 10-year guys, been doing it since I was, you know, a teenager. So I knew what to expect. I knew I'd be able to dominate in any – I wanted to work my stand-up. I really focused on my stand-up. I wanted to show that off. I was working with Sean Diggs, but he came in hot, so I just changed levels and put him on his back.
You talked about wanting to fight the killers of the UFC. You called out Sage Northcutt.
Yeah.
People seem to be divided on whether he is one of those killers. Do you think he is one of those killers of the UFC, and why was that the target?
What's his UFC record? Do you know? Anyone know? 3-1. It's a good record. Yeah, he's a tough kid. I think that fight makes sense in a lot of ways, especially right now. Both Dana White looking for a fight, guys, young guns. Both of us have questions about us, so... Let's bang out. Let's do it.
Mickey, over here to your left. I know in the lead up to the fight, you were very respectful. I am kind of curious, what was your reaction when you put out your hand yesterday and he refused to shake it at the weigh-ins?
Well, it's funny. My sister just told me that he said I was stuttering when I was talking to him. I'll tell you exactly what I said. I said, when he didn't shake my hand and he was giving me that hard look, I said, you're an actor. You're still acting. I said, we're fighting tomorrow. You know what's going to happen. I'm going to hurt you. And then he kept staring at me as I walked off. I said, keep looking at me. That's all. You know, I think it shows that he's still not a fighter to the degree that the other guys are. Guys who've been through it, guys who've really blood, sweat, and tears, you're going to shake your guy's hand and you're going to give him respect because you know he's been through the same stuff. It's like a brotherhood. You're going to go in there and try and kill each other, but you have that baseline respect. You know what I mean? So he'll get that. It's a maturing process. You know, he's a 2-year guy. He'll learn.
All right. So Mickey Gall, maybe fighting Sage Northcutt next. I'm okay with that. All right. Listen, we've got a flight we have to catch soon, but let's give a little bit of love to the rest of the card. Jimmy Rivera, hey, how impressed were you with this kid? I think, again, I've been saying it all along. I've got my eye on this guy. I think he's looked like a legitimate dude for a long time. How impressed were you with Jimmy Rivera?
I thought he looked very, very impressive. You know, I was kind of torn because, you know, I like Uriah a lot. I know you like Uriah a lot. You know, he's a fun guy to hang out with. But I know trying to put personal feelings aside, you know, you always want to be, you know, unbiased in these sort of things. So you try to keep your eyes open, and immediately Rivera just looked sharp, man. He looked dominating in there, and the stats went on to show that. So kudos for a guy that, you know, Uriah was trying to say that here's a guy that nobody really knows, and there's the danger in fighting the guy.
He
knew that he was dangerous and knew that he was something to watch. And, you know, after watching this fight, I think people are going to know, because people are going to be like, who's that one guy that just dominated Uriah? I mean, was it the best Uriah? It definitely wasn't the best performance from Uriah.
Right.
You know, so it'd be interesting. I think it's going to really leave some questions for what Uriah's future is going to be. But I thought Jimmy did, he showed up and just did a perfect job of dictating and controlling the octagon.
Yeah, he's got some real skills, and it sounds like from everything that I've seen and people that I've talked to that he really couldn't see after he got poked in the eye in the third round, but he didn't want to say that he couldn't see. Now, interesting, had the fight been stopped there, it would have gone to the cards, and I think he would have won the fight anyway, but he wanted to continue fighting on, so much respect to him. But I think he was having some real vision issues there, and you know, he didn't want to admit it. Uriah Faber, you said his future would be in question. I saw some people saying that maybe this is the last time we see Uriah fight. I mean, if he wants it to be the last time, then God bless him, dude. He's a UFC legend. He's an MMA legend. I mean, he really is, to me, a future UFC Hall of Famer, and I think a true legend of the sport. But I didn't think that, like, he looked done tonight. If he wants to be done because he's just sick of it, then good for him. Apparently, he's made a lot of money over his career, and I think he's in pretty good shape. But if he wants to keep fighting, I got no problem with that.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't mind seeing him again. And, I mean, you could see the drive and the fight still in that third round. He was going for it. I think he realized that, hey, you know, I'm behind, you know, and he still put a lot of effort, and he was still doing some good work. And I think he's still got some good fights left in him. And again, just as a personal fan of him, you know, being one of the fighters that I've always enjoyed kind of hanging around and enjoyed his fights, you know, yeah, I'd love to see it again. I'd have no problem watching Ryan.
He's one of the faces of the sport, man. There's no doubt about it. When California Love comes on the speakers, man,
yeah,
people go crazy.
Yeah.
All right, the pay-per-view opened up with Jessica Andrade just manhandling or woman-handling Joanne Calderwood. Listen, I picked Calderwood going into this. I was split on this one because I knew that Andrade had power. I didn't think that she would be able to just close the gap, throw Calderwood to the ground, and dominate her the way she did. Jessica Andrade looks like the real deal at 115 pounds. To think that she was fighting at 135 when she's outsized by people at 115 is insane. But I was impressed, and I see some people already talking about potential title shots at 115. I'm not saying she's the person to beat Joanna Andrzejczyk, but there's not necessarily a ton of contenders that just make a whole hell of a lot of sense right now. I'd be okay with that fight. I think I'd like to see it. The power of Andrade against the speed, the movement, the volume of Andrzejczyk. I think I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always down to see Joanna fight.
Yeah, right?
But
no matter who it is.
But yeah, yeah, Jessica, she's got some power, man. She really does have power in her arms. And do I think she would win? Not so much, but I think she could definitely maybe. I mean, but who knows? She's got power. I mean, and we've seen when Joanna takes a good shot, I mean, she can be rocked.
Right.
But she's just got amazing cardio and amazing recovery skills. And I just don't see anybody when it gets to that fifth round, the fourth and fifth round, the championship rounds, you know, even though Jessica looked really good today, I don't know if she can carry that through into the championship rounds. Maybe she can. I think she probably says that she can. But the pace that Joanna puts on people, I think she'd be a bigger, just maybe not too big for her because, you know, even Joanna had size on her, but it didn't play out that way.
Yeah.
You know, I think she's got one of these ones, she's just super power packed in a small package. Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the two of us.
Yeah, yeah. Very small packages.
wait. I didn't mean that. Not like that. We could just edit that part out. Kovalkovic is probably next. But if they wanted to put Andrade first, or if they wanted to say Andrade, just sit around and wait for the...
After what she did to Holly.
That's true. It's a
I don't think she could leapfrog her.
Yeah. It's a long. Who knows? That'd be a big leap up. All right. Final fight on the prelims, Jessica Eye lost a heartbreaker to Betchkoya. Man, the welcome that Jessica Eye got tonight was so spectacular, especially knowing the type of emotion she had been through and you know, the talk about her dad. And I thought Jessica Eye did enough to win this fight. I gave her rounds 1 and 2, but I got to say, I thought round 2 was very, very close, and I kind of had a bad feeling when Jessica essentially took that third round off, man. It seemed like she was willing to just kind of coast in that third round, save her energy, stay away from the power, and basically give that round away. And I just, man, when a round is as close as round 2 was, I don't think you can afford to give a round away. And I feel awful for Jessica Eye because I know this was a huge moment for her, but I can't call this a robbery. It was a close fight, and when you give away a round in a close fight, I think you just have to be willing to deal with the consequences.
Yeah. Yeah. I was pulling for her, you know.
No.
I mean, I might have been a little biased. She comes from one of the finest states in the unions. And
she comes from Texas?
Well, oh. I was like, huh? But, no, it was good. I felt bad for her. I mean, I think there was a lot of emotions, and I know that they were trying to get her up and do the press scrums.
Oh, really?
And she didn't want to do it, and they were trying to get her to the post-presser, and she just didn't want to do it. So I think she was taking it really, really hard.
Yeah.
I think she really wanted to show. She was enjoying every moment of being here, rightfully so. I think anybody would want to perform for your hometown, and unfortunately it didn't work out for her, and I'm sure she's probably going back and playing the fight over in her head and what could have went different, what could have been done differently. And but yeah, I just felt bad for her.
I did too, man. I really felt she looked pretty heartbroken when she left. Brad Tavares, longtime Las Vegas resident Brad Tavares, picked up a big win over Kyle Magalhães. I was surprised at the split decision. I thought he had done enough to win the fight. You know, a tough fight. I knew it was going to be a tough fight. Both these guys had that kind of grinding style, and props to Brad for picking up the win. I know this was a big one for him, and I thought he had done enough. I honestly didn't think it was a split decision. Nick Lentz picked up a TKO win over Michael McBride. Nick Lentz, I mean, he's just – I mean, he may not be the most exciting, the most flashy guy in the world, but, dude, he's just effective as hell. And Michael McBride, a newcomer who came in on short notice, God bless him for taking that, but that is a tall order, my friend, and he just found himself up against too much. Drew Dober picked up a TKO win over Jason Gonzalez. Hands down, the best Drew Dober we've ever seen. That dude looked incredible. And the night started out with Yancy Medeiros picking up a submission win over Sean Spencer. I knew that was going to be a good fight. I was torn on that one, man. I like both those guys, too. They're good dudes. Mm-hmm. Yancy's got such a great attitude and a fun fighter. And then Sean Spencer fights out of Dallas, Texas. So, you know, I always got love for anybody fighting out of Dallas, Texas. So, I was torn on that.
I'm not the only one that does that?
No, come on. You just represent a whole state. I try to take a city at least.
That's lame.
Well, you know, when you're from a state as big as Texas.
Yeah, I was going to say that is a big state. So. All
right, well, listen, it's 7 o'clock in the morning, and we've got a flight to catch in a couple hours. We still got to edit this. We still got to shower. We still got to pack. It's been a long week. It's been a long day, to say the least. So apologize if this is a little bit abridged. But
I'm not
bottom
apologizing.
Line is, if we keep going, we'll miss our flight.
Yeah, we got stuff to do, and I'm fading fast. I need to shower. Got to get this done, and we'll make up for it. I mean, it was never our intention to make these post-fight ones too long anyway.
That's right. That's right. You got enough to do on a Sunday. You don't want to listen to us for hours.
Yeah.
Or something.
Or, yeah, our little packages. You don't need little packages for too long. It's just a little touch. Just a little taste.
Oh, I did forget that one piece of audio. I got to think that Joanne Calderwood was disappointed with her loss, but I was so glad that you were able to catch up with her as she was leaving the building.
I still love you, Ken. I still love you. No, I can't do JoJo right now. I feel so bad for JoJo.
I know.
I was like, please don't hurt her too bad.
I know. I started to tweet out right before the fight started, like, this is a great fight. I know who the Roadshow listeners are hoping wins.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no. I mean, happy for whoever wins.
Josh,
you know, obviously.
But,
man,
I love watching her fight.
But, oh, yeah. Just JoJo looked just extra cute this week. Oh, well.
All right. Sun is rising.
I know.
Energy is fading. Time is running out. Go to iTunes, rate, review, do all that stuff. We need some reviews. I love reading those reviews. I haven't got a new one in like a week or two. I love reading those. You know, Instagram, Twitter, all those social media things. You know all the good stuff. Hope you enjoyed UFC 203. We're running out of time. We're going to miss our flight. Thanks for listening.